We've been looking at these great powers that control the world in its end times, and we have given some attention to the Great Northern Confederacy. This great land area north of Palestine to be headed up in the end times by Russia with her allies, and the joining together with a confederacy from the south that we'll be looking at a little more detail. Tonight we want to look at a confederacy that has particular interest to us because it is a confederacy of the Western nations of which we are a part. Now the trend in our world today is for unification in politics and in religion. And there is a time which is coming in which there will be a worldwide political unity with a man totally dominated by Satan and controlled by him in charge. We're going to look at the particular union that this man directs and which he controls in a very bestial way. We're speaking about the Roman Empire in its final days. And in order to get the picture, we need to go back and take a look at Rome in history. Daniel has predicted the rise and the fall of world empires from his day to the beginning of the millennium. And you find, as you read through the book of Daniel, through symbolical presentations which are then interpreted, that from Daniel's day there was to be a series of world empires, four of them. That is, four nations who would rule the whole world. Daniel himself was living in one of those, which was the Babylonian Empire. That was conquered and replaced by the Medo-Persian Empire, and that in time was replaced by the world empire of the Greeks. Now those empires rose and fell in a comparatively short period of time. But the descriptions in Daniel are of such detail and of such fantastic accuracy concerning the rise and fall of these empires that the liberal critics have consistently taken the book of Daniel and insisted that it could not have been written by the man Daniel, but that it was written much later in the world history. It was written at a time when these things had already taken place, and that the book of Daniel was written by somebody who had seen all this take place, who wrote it down, and then pretended that it was written by Daniel. However, there are biblical scholars of considerable reputation who have ably demonstrated that the book of Daniel indeed bears all the authentication of having come from the period of time of the Babylonian Empire and from the hand of Daniel. This is a book that indeed sticks in the craw of the liberals like a broken chicken bone, because they simply gag upon the fantastic details of this book. Because if Daniel was written in the time of the Babylonian Empire by Daniel, then you have a tremendous evidence for the supernatural quality of the Bible. Well, that's exactly what did happen. Daniel said there'd be four empires, and there would be a fifth world empire, and that would be the millennial kingdom of Jesus Christ. Now the fourth empire is the one that he concentrates on in that book, and that is the Roman Empire. This was the last of the four. We can say right off to begin with tonight that there is no nation on the face of the earth that you know today who will rule the whole world. The only kingdom which will again rule the world will be a Roman Empire revived on the territory of the old Roman Empire, and this one will in turn be destroyed by the millennial kingdom and the appearance of Jesus Christ. Now, the final stage of the Roman Empire was described in detail just as the previous empires and the first part of the Roman Empire. Now, the first part of the description of the Roman Empire indeed came to pass in specific detail. But suddenly, you come to a point in the description of this empire and it seems like a curtain drops. Because all of a sudden, everything that was predicted about the last part of the Roman Empire and about its leadership suddenly phases out when it comes to looking in history and seeing this fulfilled. And we have to come to the conclusion that the last part of what was predicted concerning the Roman Empire has never been fulfilled. This was, for example, in the form of an image that Daniel saw, and the part of the image particularly where the empire is reduced to a confederation of 10 nations has never been true upon the scene of human history. So from 200 BC, Rome began to dominate this empire that Daniel concentrates on. Rome began to dominate the western end of the Mediterranean Sea, and its power extended around 200 BC all the way to the in the north to the Alps. Gradually, Roman power moved eastward, and as the Greek Empire declined, the Roman Empire rose and replaced it in Macedon, Greece, Asia Minor, ever moving eastward. Finally, Rome conquered Palestine under General Pompeius, and in 63 B.C. took the city of Jerusalem. And this was the condition when the Lord Jesus Christ was born, when Rome was in control of the land of Palestine and the Jewish people were under the authority of the Roman Empire. Now, the Roman Empire continued to expand after this time until it included Britain, Switzerland, France, Belgium, and all areas south of the Rhine and the Danube rivers. By 200 A.D., most of Mesopotamia and the area up to the Euphrates River were under Roman control, so that Rome became a tremendous world empire in the extent of its geographical control. And Rome was able to handle this. For one thing, Rome had a unique and supremely expert military force. And Rome had produced, particularly under Julius Caesar, devised a system of governmental administration that stabilized the government for hundreds of years after the time of Julius Caesar. And Rome knew how to deal with conquered peoples. And Rome imposed a peace upon the world, and it took no foolishness from anybody who threatened that peace in any way. The Pax Romanus was supreme. It would seem that the glory of Rome could never fade. And it was a frightful thing. And as Daniel tells us about this in predicting this empire, he presents it as something very frightful that nobody could resist. In Daniel chapter 2, verse 40, he says, "This fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these shall it break in pieces and bruise." And when the Romans moved into a territory, they immediately removed anybody who was a threat to their control, to their authority, and millions of people that they conquered were sent into slavery. That's why the Roman Empire had such a fantastic number of slaves throughout the area of its control. Now, the final state and destruction of this empire, for it does come to a point of being destroyed, is predicted in Daniel chapter 2, beginning at verse 42. Daniel says, "And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not adhere one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay." There comes a time when the empire begins to break up, and it can't hold itself together. "And in the days of these kings," that is, these ten-toe kings, "in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed." Now that tells us when the fifth kingdom, the millennial kingdom of Jesus Christ, is going to come about. It will come after the Roman Empire has come to its final stage, where it is now in the form of a confederacy of 10 nations, represented by these 10 toes and confirmed by many other scriptures. It is when it is in that 10-nation confederacy stage that Jesus Christ returns. So therefore, as you look upon the territory of the Mediterranean area today and the nations that compose the Mediterranean area, and you see these nations that were once part of the Roman Empire joining themselves together into a confederacy, you are seeing the preview of the creation of this revived state of the Roman Empire, because that's what's going to happen. While the Roman Empire came in the 15th century to a place where in all practical effects it no longer existed, it will come to a place where it again will exist and where it will again assume its worldwide control. So verse 44 says, "In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. But it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, a supernatural devastation, and that it broke in pieces the iron and bronze and clay and silver and gold of the image that Daniel saw, the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass, the king of Babylon, hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation of it is sure." Now, there has never been this kind of a union of nations on the territory of the old Roman Empire. Daniel 7, verses 7 and 8, speak again of that fourth empire. Daniel says, "After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the residue with its feet. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before which there were 3 of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things." Now, there has been no historical conquest of the Roman Empire in this form. But the time came when this empire did decline, never having arrived at a 10-nation stage, but it did decline. It took 4 centuries for Rome to rise to a place of world domination, and that has not fully ended yet. In 364 A.D., the Roman Empire split into an eastern and western section, as was represented by the 2 legs of Daniel's image. The non-Roman people who were beyond the boundaries, beyond the Danube, and beyond the Rhine River, were referred to as barbarians. And the barbarians gradually began encroaching upon the territory of the Roman Empire. And the invasions came in the 5th century, even from North Africa. In time, under Mohammedan attack, the Eastern Roman Empire fell. The Western part fell first. Persia, Syria, Palestine, Egypt, North Africa, Spain, one by one, were absorbed by the followers of Muhammad. The Turks, in turn, conquered the Mohammedans, and they extended their control over still greater areas of the old Roman Empire. And finally, in 1453, Constantinople, the capital of the Eastern Empire, fell. And on that day, the Roman Empire officially came to an end. Muslim worship was installed, and the Rome of old no longer exists, ceased to exist in all practical effects. World War I freed Palestine from Turkish rule. Things began moving in Europe in our day, which had begun to portend the revival of Rome in its final stage of a 10-nation federation. For 1,500 years, then, Rome existed. But it never existed in this union of 10 nations. So let's take a look at this revival now in history. Here's the pattern of restoration. This revived empire will no doubt include Rome as its capital, and it will no doubt be located in the territory around the Mediterranean Sea that was once controlled by the Roman Empire. But it's going to go in several stages. There will be a revival in 3 distinct stages. 1, there's going to be 10 nations who, on their own, decide to cooperate. 10 nations who are facing political and economic stresses, and these 10 nations get together and they say, "Why don't we cooperate?" Now, immediately, you can't help but think of the European economic market. which is doing exactly that, a group of nations which has banded together for political and economic advantages, and it has created a tremendously strong competitor economically in Western Europe to the United States. Now, the word is regularly coming out of the European economic market that it now wants to expand itself to, of all things, 10 nations. And every time this gets on the air, every time this gets in print, Bereans start tearing magazines apart like crazy and putting articles in my box, because it is a very exciting development. It was exciting enough that there are 7 in there now, but for them to come along and say, we want to take this nation, in order to expand it to 10, it does get a little bit awesome to consider. So that's going to be the first stage, just 10 nations getting together. Now, the second stage is they're uniting under one supreme ruler. We read here in Daniel chapter 7, verse 8, that there arose among these 10 rulers of these 10 nations a little horn, and that this little horn plucked up 3 of the other horns, which means he conquered, he defeated 3 of the other kings, 3 of the other nations. And when the other 7 nations saw that, they concluded that there was no one like this ruler, no one that could stand up to him. And so instead of fighting him, they joined him. And the result is that the second stage of this revived empire's reach, where now there is one dictator over 10 nations, and these 10 nations are no longer a confederacy, but they're now united into a single nation, a federation, sort of like the states of the United States of Europe, with this man in charge. Now, there's going to be a third stage of the revived Roman Empire, and that takes place in the middle of the tribulation period, the final 7 years of the world's history before Jesus Christ returns. In the middle of that tribulation period, conditions will arise on the world scene which will make it possible for this little horn dictator to take over rule of the whole world. And he will no longer be the ruler of simply his confederacy, his federation of 10 European nations, but he will now be ruler of the whole world. Now, this Western Confederacy has to exist before Jesus Christ returns, because he's the one who destroys it. So it's going to form up early in that 7-year period. It will undoubtedly begin to form up before the tribulation, but in the first part of the tribulation period, these nations are going to get together. And this future dictator is going to rise very rapidly to power and join the 10 nations. Now, if you and I are living in the last generation before the Lord's return, and you remember that a generation is 40 years, in 1948, the nation of Israel came into being again after centuries of dispersion, and that the Lord said that certain things would be realized when this nation was restored, that certain things would then follow, and this generation of Jews would see these things come to pass in its valley of dead, dry bones vision, the bones representing the nation of both northern and southern kingdom of Israel are brought together, sinews and muscles and blood put into the body and the whole thing brought to life. This is probably what took place in 1948. And then in a generation, all of these things that are to take place upon the world scene in its final days, we've been told, are to come to pass. That means that we're dealing with perhaps 1988. And we're just thinking out loud. So don't go running home telling your folks that last Sunday night they told us when the end of the world is going to be. However, if you want to think that, I would suggest that you go ahead and put a pretty good offering in the night, one last shot at it. We're dealing here with 1988, so we're in 71, and we have maybe 17 years. Now, if we are that last generation, Who's going to run around following a 17-year-old teenager as a world ruler? Obviously, this man has to come on the scene early enough to have some maturity. Now, we've got some 17-year-olds around here. I mean, I think there's like Don Dozier. Who's going to run around and follow Don Dozier to doomsday? Or anybody, any of the rest of them we have here? You see, this man obviously has to be on the scene. And if this is our anchor point, 48, when Israel came a nation, and that's Ezekiel's picture that was fulfilled, and we've got a generation to go, then we're down close to the end of the line. And that means that this man is already on the scene, and he is rising, no doubt. He certainly is active in political circles, and he is no doubt rising to some degree of prestige within the political world. Because when he shows up, he's going to make an impressive mark, and before long, he's running the whole show. The nature of this dictator who will be running this Western Confederacy is described as one of great blasphemy. In Daniel chapter 7, verse 25, "And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and he shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change the times and the laws, and they shall be given into his hands until a time and times and the dividing of time." Now here's an expression, again in Scripture, time and times, plural, and the dividing of time, which is an Old Testament way of referring to a period of time that keeps reoccurring here in the prophetic scriptures, a period of 3.5 years. So what the Word of God is saying is that here's the rapture takes place, and the saints, the Christians, are taken to heaven. And then begins a period of 7 years of tribulation. Then comes the millennium, when the Lord returns with the church from heaven. This is divided into 3.5 and 3.5 years. This latter part is called the Great Tribulation. And this man comes to world power at this point. And then the scriptures say he has 3.5 years, time, times, and a half time. And then he is brought to judgment. So this man is destroyed at the second coming of Jesus Christ. Daniel chapter 7, verse 26. "But the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him." The Lord Jesus Christ returns, and he takes over. Where is this Roman dictator going to come from? What's his racial background? Well, we may make a deduction concerning what his background is going to be racially from Daniel chapter 9, beginning at verse 26. Daniel 9:26 says that after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off. Daniel was given a vision, and he was told that God had 490 years that he intended for dealing with the people of Israel. 490 years, and then his dealings with the people of Israel would be at an end. And 483 years in history passed. The chronological scholars have very accurately put this together and figured this out for us, and found that these 483 years came to the point of the death of Christ on the cross, to the week. And the result is that this is the time at which the Messiah was cut off. 62 weeks, these are weeks of years. 483 years, and Jesus Christ was cut off. Well, when that happened, God discontinued his dealings with the Jewish people as a nation. And you see, since the death of Christ, God has no longer been dealing with the Jews as a nation. Now he deals with Jews like he deals with Gentiles, just as human beings. They all must be saved by a personal faith in Jesus Christ and enter the church body. Now, after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself, and the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. Now notice that expression, the people of the prince that shall come. The prince that shall come here is our old friend, the world dictator, the Antichrist. And the people that shall come are going to destroy the city and the sanctuary of Jerusalem and the temple. And this was done by the Roman general Titus in 70 AD. So this prince has to come out of a nation of the old Roman Empire. He's going to be somebody from Western Europe. The prince, when he does come, is going to begin his rule here at the beginning of the tribulation on good terms with the Jewish people. He will naturally want to bring the area of Palestine under the area of his control, and so he will make a national security covenant with the people of Israel. Daniel 9:27. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. But in the middle of the week, in the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. The Jews are here in the tribulation. They have now reconstructed during this 3.5 year period, and perhaps preceding the rapture, they have reconstructed the temple. They have now reinstituted all of their sacrifices and their offerings. And they are now under a security pact with this dictator who has risen from these Western nations. And the Jew finally thinks that he has come to peace. But they come to the middle of the tribulation period, and something big takes place in the middle of the tribulation. That something is the attack by the Northern Confederacy that we looked at last Sunday night. The Northern Confederacy, in association with the Confederacy of the South, their attack upon Israel. The Roman dictator has a treaty with them to protect them, but he doesn't have to use it. Because as Ezekiel 38 and chapters 38 and 39 indicate, Russia and her allies of the North and the South are destroyed supernaturally by God on the field of battle. He never has to come to grips with them. Now, immediately overnight, the whole political picture has changed. He's been sitting there as a very dominant personality around the Mediterranean Sea. He's conquered via the kings, and the other seven throw in with him. So he's got a nation of 10 kingdoms put together. And he has made a security pact with Israel. And they're going along enjoying life under the aegis of his protection. And suddenly, Russia is no longer in the picture. Suddenly, the life has been beaten out of Egypt and the Arab nations and her African allies. All of the communist world under Russian control is crushed. What do you think the Antichrist is going to do? He's going to make a worldwide proclamation at this point that declares that he is now the supreme political authority of all the world. And that's when the Roman Empire comes to this third stage and he becomes the world ruler. And in the process of doing that, he double-crosses the Jewish people and the covenant that he has made with them. He moves into Jerusalem and he sets up his own image and he says, "This is now your God. Start worshiping it at the threat of your life." His false prophet moves in and as always supports him and creates certain miraculous experiences. And I have to remind you again that Satan and the demonic world can perform very many great miraculous experiences. Somebody came to me this week and said, "I have a friend who has a little boy, a 2-year-old boy, a little beauty. Some time ago he contacted virus hepatitis. The result of the fever and the strain on his little body created mental and physical deterioration in the child. Now his blood vessels were weakened and beginning to burst, and the doctor said, there is no hope for the child. The report this morning was that he has contracted pneumonia, and the circumstance is even more ominous for the life of this child. Now, the lady said, my friend asked me to contact you. There is a lady on Dallas television who is a healer. I don't even remember her name now. Madam Oddball would be good enough. Captain Kangaroo? No. Whatever it is, anyhow, this mother is desperate, which of course she would be. She said, would it be right for me to take the baby to her? What would you say? Here are parents who are desperately doing anything, you know. So we had to talk a little about the faith rest technique. I had to remind her a little bit as to what the future could be. If it is in the providence of God that this child's life should ebb out, I told her that she needs to remind this mother where this baby is going. This child is going straight to heaven. The mother's a Christian. And a friend told me this morning, the mother and her husband prayed over this, and they committed this child in faith rest to the Lord, that His hand would deal with him, and they are going to accept it. They're considerably at peace about it now. This child could grow up, and could you imagine the devastation that could come into a life with a child who is under such extreme mental and physical retardation? The burdens and the agonies and the problems that could be created because we get pushy with God and insist that we must have something instead of resting by faith and letting Him solve the problem in His good judgment. The demonic world of the healers produces healing. And I didn't tell this lady that that isn't ever the case, because demons can make you sick. And when you get these healings, it is the demonic world which is performing for you. And there are thousands of Christians who are totally incapacitated and ineffective in the Lord's work because they're caught up in the healing racket and in the tongues movement. This man is going to be very, very impressive. His demonic power will seem to give life to the image of the Antichrist. And people will be impressed by the miracles like they are today. And people will make the same mistake they're making in Dallas tonight, of thinking they are seeing God working and not realizing that they're seeing Satan putting on some of his best performances for them. The security pact will be broken, and the Jew will come into the time of his great tribulation. Now the dictator takes control of the whole world. Revelation 13. His other world organizations are out of the way. Confederacy of the North, Confederacy of the South, and he moves in. Revelation chapter 13, verses 7 and 8. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given unto him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. Now you see, when in history has there been a ruler of the Roman Empire who controlled the whole world? He controlled the known world of the Mediterranean area. When in modern times has there been a ruler who controlled the whole world? Never. But this man, this Roman ruler, will control the whole world. Where does the United States fit in? Well, right now, right off the bat, we know that the United States is going to be part of this area dominated by the Roman ruler. The United States will no longer be a sovereign, independent nation. The United States will be under the Roman ruler's control in these years. The explanation of how this comes about, as we said, is that Northern Confederacy and the Southern Confederacy moved out. And it indicates that he will rule from the middle of the tribulation. But the power of this dictator begins to deteriorate here in the last 3 years. And the result is that when we get to the end, we discover that he is faced with the final world war. And this is the war that is triggered by nations rebelling against his rule. This is the series of campaigns of the campaign of Armageddon. This is where the nations are gathered on the plain of Megiddo in order to do battle with one another when Jesus Christ returns. The weapons are so frightful, the Bible says, that if Jesus Christ didn't return, there wouldn't be any humanity left on the earth. And so he returns, and they turn to do battle with him, with the result that they are destroyed. Now, this dictator is associated with one other element. So you have the picture about this Western Confederacy. And we're going to have to deal with them a little more and tie them into how they are related to this world scene. But he is associated with the world church. This dictator, in the first part of the tribulation period, joins forces with the apostate church of Christendom. And the Bible pictures this in Revelation 17 as a harlot woman who is riding this political ruler, which means that she controls him. Now, as you read through Revelation 17, you'll discover that this church has in it the elements of the old Babylonian religious system originated by Nimrod and Semiramis, the mother and cult worship, which was absorbed into the Roman Catholic Church and which is so prominent in it today. Now, in the middle of the tribulation period, when Russia and the nations of the South are out of the way, he doesn't need the world church anymore. And so he turns against this church and destroys it with the help of his false prophet, and instead sets himself up as the god in the Jews' temple to be worshipped. Now, this is the cult, then, of the beast. Revelation chapter 17, beginning at verse 16. The 10 horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the harlot, the false church, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. Now, what we see again in our day is that religious groups are joining together. The liberal world is fanatic for the idea of an ecumenical joining together of all religious groups. And they're pursuing this with a vengeance. Well, what are they doing? They're laying the ground for the false church that the dictator of the revived Roman Empire will himself dominate. Now, the Antichrist sets himself up. He rejects, Daniel says, all the gods of his fathers. Not the god of his father, but the gods of his fathers is a better translation. He totally rejects what he's always been associated with. The question arises sometimes as to whether this man is a Jew. Daniel 11:37, neither shall he regard the gods of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any god, for he shall magnify himself above all. Now, in the Bible, when the Jews speak about God, their name for God is Jehovah. That is the name which is uniquely related to the Jews. But there is another name for God, which is Elohim, which is actually a plural, a plurality. And this is the word which is used here in Daniel. It is the Elohim of his father, which means, and it can be translated as gods. Some people have said, well, the God of his father must be the God of Israel. And therefore, this man has to be a Jew, but that's not true. If it had said the God of Jehovah, the Jehovah of his fathers, then we would have had confirmation that it is the Jewish people. But we have as the Elohim of his fathers. That means true or false gods can be called this. And it is whatever gods he may have worshipped, he rejects. And the desire of women is a reference to the desire of women to be the mother of the Messiah. Well, he rejects the Messiah of the Jews. He rejects all the false gods. And the God that he does worship in Daniel 11:38 is a military god, but in his estate shall he honor the god of fortresses, and a god whom his fathers knew not shall he honor with gold and silver and precious stone and pleasant things. So this man honors military power. So there's the picture. A Western Confederacy. And as you watch today's trends and today's news, this is what you should be observing. That the world is moving so that in the Western nations, there is going to be a revival of Rome in its 10-nation, 10-toe state. These nations are going to join together for one reason or another. Out of them will arise a strong man who will take over the whole group and form them into one nation. He will then become the dominant personality of the Mediterranean. After the Confederacy of the Northern King under Russia and of the Southern King under Egypt are destroyed, he becomes the world ruler. And then he who has been the friend of the Jews moves in upon the Jews and takes over their temple and sets himself up as the god that they are to worship. And he is a blasphemous, arrogant, foul-mouthed, big-talking personality who has no respect for anything that has ever been in the past, and who indeed acts as the god who is in control of all that has ever been. He just takes over all of humanity and all of society and begins forming it as per the directions of Satan, who controls him. It is this man who is probably on the world scene today, rising to political power, who will be the instrument to bring the final devastating judgments upon the Jewish people as they have returned to their land, all their temple worship and sacrifices set up, and seemingly to have finally come to that point of peace, only suddenly, in the middle of the tribulation, to come to the worst persecution the Jews have ever faced. So whatever comes out of Europe that shapes up toward this end is the signal of the nearness of the Lord's return.